Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Jim Fowler to the broadcast. Jim is the Chief Information Officer of GE Capital. In that role, he's responsible for delivering digital global business processes and is an active participant in driving GE's commercial digital strategy through GE's Information Management Council. Jim was previously the CIO of multiple businesses within General Electric, including GE Power and Water, GE Power Generation Services and CSA Automation, GE Intelligent Platforms, and Supply Chain at GE Aviation. He was also the Chief Technology Officer of Architecture and Design with GE Infrastructure. Prior to his time at General Electric, he held roles with NCR and Accenture. Jim has a Bachelor of Science degree in Management Information Systems and Marketing from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, as well as an MBA from Xavier University in Cincinnati, Ohio. I recently caught up with Jim by phone in his office in Connecticut, and our conversation revolved around World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as we discussed his organization's development, training, and recruiting programs. Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed the ways in which innovation is fostered across GE, as well as a variety of other topics.
This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and a variety of other topics. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Jim, I thought we'd begin with GE Capital, the business unit that you are currently a part of as the Chief Information Officer. Can you just take a moment to describe GE Capital's business and IT's role in that business?
Yeah, sure. So GE Capital is one of the divisions of the General Electric Company. And what GE Capital does is basically provide mid-market and specialty financing to companies around the world. So whether it be commercial loans and leases, commercial real estate, aviation services, energy financial services, et cetera, we do a lot of financing, mainly though related to infrastructure and technology within the industries that our industrial businesses support.
In the role of IT, how would you typify the role that technology plays in the evolution of that business?
Yeah, so from a role of IT, you know, IT is the technology arm of the business. So it really, in my mind, plays a couple of arms. One is more the traditional IT role of providing the infrastructure and the business systems on which the business processes run. But we're also the engineering arm and the supply chain arm. And what I mean by that is, you know, more of our financial products have digital capabilities associated with them. And so we do a lot of technical innovation to help support the growth of new products and services across the business unit. And then ultimately are the supply chain. So if you think about a supply chain in a manufacturing company, it's how the process or how the product moves through the business process and what comes out the back end. In many cases, in a financial services company, that's data. And so we also kind of serve that supply chain role as well in the business.
It's interesting you mentioned digital. Obviously, that's a major rising trend, and there's a lot of sort of push and pull between a variety of functions. And I shouldn't just state that as a competitive way. There's also a lot of collaboration that's happening across enterprises as they formulate a digital plan, a digital strategy. Can you talk a bit about the path towards the development of that digital strategy, as I know you're someone who's very actively participating in the development of that?
Yeah. You know, if you think about financial services and how financial services has grown up, the service that, you know, banks and financial institutions, you know, first provided was kind of loans. We're going to loan you an amount of money and you're going to pay us back with a specified interest rate. And that was really kind of viewed as the service that financial companies provided. And over time, they've kind of branched out. And so financial services went from just loans to loans and leases to specialty investment vehicles to equity investments. And we're, if you think about where we're at now, I would say we're at a pivot for financial services, where just providing the capital for growth for a company isn't good enough anymore, and that companies are interested in financial services that include the ability to optimize how they run the assets that they're financing, that come with information, data, with technology that makes those assets that they're funding more productive. And they're looking for new vehicles that match their own financial cycles. And so from a technology perspective, you know, we look to leverage a lot of up-and-coming trends that are coming, frankly, from our industrial businesses. So how our aviation business thinks about fuel optimization on a jet engine, believe it or not, has applicability to how we think about how we help a fleet manager manage fuel in vehicles that are on the road or anywhere around the U.S. We've got about 1 million fleet vehicles that sit in the U.S. that are feeding telematics data back to us that we're using to turn into data that's helping a fleet manager save fuel, hence lowering their overall cost of operating their fleet units. And so it's those types of technical solutions that my team is responsible for figuring out how do we technically architect those services that come along with the financial vehicle that we're providing a company.
And I think I hear you saying, if I'm not mistaken, Jim, that more of what GE creates is being created with the ability to gather data in a sort of Internet of Things type fashion. Is that an appropriate assumption?
Yeah, you got it. You know, the industrial internet really is going to show us that more and more things are going to be connected. And as those things connected, they're going to generate data and information. So whether it be a vehicle that's going to generate data through telematics that you're going to use to optimize maintenance and fuel savings, it could be data coming from building control systems in a real estate environment that's helping you understand how to manage the asset of a real estate asset differently. I heard a great example. It didn't come from us, from a real estate company that was in Tokyo that started to use the elevator data from the buildings that they owned to predict when they were going to have early terminations of leases, because they could see when the traffic slowed down going to a specific floor, and they turned that back into an analytic that helped them predict both when a company was going to back out of a lease or when they might need more space because they were seeing more traffic going to that floor. And so if you think about it, even buildings today are generating data that help us optimize that asset for a customer. And we're all about thinking about how do we marry that up with the financial mechanism that we're giving to fund that asset.
Fascinating, Jim. And I'd be interested in your perspectives as more and more of what is created has the ability to lend this sort of data, which can possibly lead to the sorts of insights you've just described. It still does require, at the end of the day, of some sort of human interpretation in order for action to be taken. And needless to say, there's also a human intervention that's needed in order to set up the original algorithms to develop the data that could lead to insight as well. As you think about the marriage of the technology versus the kinds of skills that are perhaps either newly needed or at least needed in greater quantity today than in past years as a result of the kinds of opportunities you're articulating, what does this mean in terms of the way in which you develop your staff, either hiring new ones or training existing ones, to be able to draw out the kinds of insights that will ensure that GE Capital and GE, more generally speaking, is leveraging this data in the best possible way?
That's a great question. You know, I'll answer it a couple of different ways. I'd say first, you've got to create an environment for your employees that encourages innovation, and that's nothing new. I think everybody kind of gets that that's the world that you live in. But that comes with the change in how you kind of staff, organize, and run your teams. And so a couple of things that I think are important is, one, co-location is important. We've had a lot of success in, for example, our New Orleans office, where we've put 300 technical professionals in a completely agile facility that gives them the ability to do agile programming. We've hired a lot from the outside, but married along with it a lot of domain expertise around the business. And so first, that environment matters, right? The co-location matters. Having people that are distributed working on work teams where you've got, you know, two people in one location, three people in the next, and four people in a third, right? They're just not incented, and they're not structured in a way that's going to help them innovate. So that's the first part of it. The second thing that I would tell you is we're building our teams is that domain matters. It's really hard to go into an airline and tell them that you understand how to run their airline better when you have nobody who has experience from the airlines. And so one of the things that really matters to us is that we're hiring people with domain expertise who really understand the industries with which we're supporting. So in the last few years, as we've started to insource, we've been looking for people with one financial services background that want to make a jump into IT or technology. But we've also been very interested in finding people with kind of mid-market backgrounds that might have worked in an OEM that works with dealers or in the dealer situation themselves, or people that were fleet managers, right? Finding those types of people with that domain background really matters when you're starting to develop digital products. It's not good enough just to be a quant or a mathematics person or great at analytics. You really got to understand the domain experience. And then the third thing I'd say is you've got to have people that are passionate about technology. And so one of the things that I'm looking for are people who throughout their career are completely reinventing themselves. That, you know, 30 years ago, they might have been a COBOL programmer. 10 years later, they might have started to get into Java. That today, they're playing around with R and they're looking at new technologies. And so I'm looking for people who constantly are reinventing themselves as technology progresses as well. And for me, that's the three big things that you got to find if you're really going to want to play in this space well.
You began that very interesting vignette with the mention of innovation for obvious reasons. IT departments have not necessarily, and even today, are to varying degrees drivers of innovation. Thankfully, an increasing number of chief information officers see as part of their purview, either at least partial, and in some cases even a leadership stake in innovation on behalf of the enterprises that they're a part of. Can you talk a bit about some of the ways in which you foster that innovation, the processes that you use? You've certainly talked about the very important people element to that as well, and tuning the organization differently so that you can be assured that the kinds of insights might be lent towards innovative new ideas. But are there methods that you use either by having sort of innovation days or short bursts during specific periods and or longer term initiatives that promote innovation within IT?
Yeah. So one of the things in GE that we've embraced is a process called FastWorks. And so when I try to explain FastWorks to somebody who's not from inside GE, I just tell them it's somewhat the agile methodology on steroids, where you are taking the best elements of an agile programming methodology, but marrying it up with a set of leadership tools and business process understanding that are 100% focused on the customer. And I don't mean an internal customer. I'm an external customer. It starts with how do our customers make money and what can we do to help them make more of it in simple terms. And then you back into what are the things that I can do very quickly in short order to develop solutions to their problems that are going to make them more profitable. And so that eye on the customer through the FastWorks process is really the first thing that we keep focused on. And so that's been a great methodology. It's really taken hold, I would say, in GE in the last kind of 2 years. It's, you know, championed by Jeff Immelt. And I think it's really made us really start thinking about how we do new product introduction and how we do product development very differently than we did as much as, you know, 12 and 18 months ago. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it really isn't about a methodology or something that we've done to promote it, but it was really just helping our function, our IT function within the business, understand that the CIOs of today or yesterday are really just going to be irrelevant 10 years from now if they don't start to deliver value and drive growth and profits of the business. I think that there's a kind of a view that has been driven by our business partners and our business leaders that said, you know, the role of IT is really just to keep thinking about transactional systems and running them in a secure and strong operations way. But I think if you think in that mentality today as an IT leader, you're really going to be irrelevant soon, because how that software runs in a cloud-based environment with solutions that are more simply installed and run out of the box. If you don't help your business leaders understand how they can make more money, and frankly, how their customers can make more money through the use of technology, then I think you find yourself being irrelevant, and you find yourself being pushed further and further down in the organization. And so I think the other thing that I really focused on is helping the team that I work with here start to really engage with and understand what are some of the problems that our customers and our business partners are facing, and have a little risk in the game. Raise our hand and say, you know what? Sign us up to fix a piece of that. I tell every one of my leaders that their goals and objectives should be the same goals and objectives of their business leaders. And I said, and if you go read their goals and objectives, it doesn't say anything about doing the upgrade of the ERP this month, and it doesn't say anything about, you know, reducing obsolescence in our infrastructure. Frankly, they just assume that you're doing those things. It talks about what they're going to do to drive top-line growth, what they're going to do to drive better profitability at the bottom line, how they're going to improve their product margins, how they're going to improve their operating margins. And engaging at the level of that conversation and taking risk and raising your hand to say, I own a piece of that for you, I think completely changes the role of IT and gets you a better seat at the table to be more involved in innovation, because then that's what you're doing to drive those bottom line activities. Sorry, it's a long-winded answer, but I think this is just a critical point for IT right now.
Absolutely. You talked about how some of the aspects of what's being driven are actually corporate-wide, and I'm curious, especially as somebody who has been the chief information officer and an IT leader in multiple parts of GE's various business units and functional areas of the organization, how much is done commonly? How much is driven from the top versus those things that are either interpreted or even completely done uniquely within one business or another?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's a fantastic topic for us right now, because what it really evolves around is driving things from the top that really provide no strategic differentiation in the marketplace. So I'll give you an example. How we invoice a customer, and whether it's a green invoice or a yellow invoice or a blue invoice, doesn't mean that we're going to sell one more aircraft engine or we're going to underwrite one more loan, and it doesn't mean that we're going to, you know, sell one more locomotive across GE, right? Those things don't differentiate us in the marketplace compared to our competitors. And so we're moving more and more to centralize those activities that just are not differentiating. Where they differentiate us in the marketplace, where there's a product or a service or a feature that we need to push that is very customer specific and that does generate, you know, top line revenue, those are the things that we push out to the edges, that we let not just the division, but the business unit or the sub-business unit within the division has a lot of autonomy to build those solutions. And then our goal is to leverage and harvest. If my equipment finance business in the U.S. has done something that's very specific to their client base that's differentiating them in the marketplace, then we're going to want to lift that up. And I might apply it to not just the financial services businesses here, but I might lift up that capability and take it over to our energy management business that's also got a dealer-based business and say, hey, is there some applicability for you to use this? You know, if our energy management business, as an example, developed a mobile-based configuration tool that's differentiating them in the marketplace right now, and we've looked at how we can lift that and apply that out to our sales team here. Our sales team here developed a great Salesforce tool that's called Genius, that gives them a great increase in the amount of insights they have about a customer before they walk in the door, that the industrial businesses are raising their hand saying, hey, we want to go apply that out, and we want to take what you've kind of done there and harvest that to differentiate us in the marketplace. And so that's how we think about it. And I think that's working really well to tell us where we should be investing in autonomy and where we should be controlling and say, you know what, we're going to do this centrally.
You know, outside of the GE setting, financial services tends to be a fairly, generally speaking, I'm painting with a broad brushstroke, but a closed environment when it comes to IT. Oftentimes the biggest hires are from other companies within the same industry. There seems to be a bias at times for prior experience in financial services. Obviously, you're a great example of somebody who grew up not in financial services, but in an industrial environment within the same company. But I wonder if you have a perspective on that. Perhaps you may agree or disagree with my assumption, given the vast network you have within financial services, no doubt. But I'd also be very curious about the advantages, aside from the obvious advantages with the other parts of the organization being a portion of your customer set, and simply understanding, having walked a mile in a variety of shoes in the various parts of that business, but also as it applies very specifically to GE Capital, the advantages of thinking about things a little bit differently because you've not grown up with the kind of inherited knowledge of the industry.
Yeah, so no, it's a good question. I get it quite a bit. In fact, I think I asked that question when they asked me if I was interested in this job. I remember, getting the call from one of the leaders saying, "Hey, we're interested in talking to you about this role." And I called a good friend of mine who had worked in the GE Capital business before, and I said to them, "So, I don't know anything about financial services. It's not my background. Why should I go do this role?" And their answer to me, was a little flippant, but I kind of kept it in the back of my mind. He said, "Well, at the end of the day, they borrow money at one rate and they lend it at another and they make profit in the middle. And as long as you kind of keep it that simple in your mind when you start, you'll learn the technical differences in how they do it. And along the way, you'll find that what you do in the industrial businesses isn't that different from the financial services business." And so I kind of took that approach to it. And what I found is they really were right. I did have to learn, and I'm still learning, frankly, some of the ins and outs of the technical ways that we lend money to our customers. But what I found that was probably more intriguing to me is that some of the same problems that we were working to solve for our customers in the industrial businesses are the exact same problems that we're trying to solve for our customers in the financial services business. So I'll just give you a couple of quick examples. When we go out and talk to mid-market customers, so mid-market in the U.S. for us is companies with revenues between $10 million and $1 billion. They make up about 3% of all companies, but over one-third of all jobs and one-third of the private sector GDP, right? So they kind of get underlooked, but they're a major portion of the U.S. economy. And you say, "What's your number one problem?" And they'll say, "It's the cost of healthcare." And you say, "Well, what can GE Capital do to help them with the cost of healthcare?" And if you look at our healthcare financial services business, it's right in that space. And it's looking at how do we provide the financing and the optimization for the equipment that's used in financing across medical institutions around the U.S., which gives us some insights to go talk to those mid-market companies about it. If you go back into our GE healthcare business, it's the same problem they're trying to solve for companies. Another example is fuel. So one of the big things you'll hear from mid-market customers in the U.S. is their cost of doing business, specifically related to things like fuel costs, energy costs, are their number one problem. And so when we're putting together, financial services for them, we're trying to do it in such a way that helps them manage those costs. And we're doing it through new analytics and new services that we're finding for them. If you go over to our power and water business, it's the exact same problem. If you go to our aviation business, it's how they drive down the fuel costs and the maintenance costs for the airlines they work with. And so what I found when I got over to the financial services side is the technology problem that I'm solving is the same. It was around data. It's how do I make sure that we're getting high quality data from inception, so when we accept that data in and we start to think about that data like an asset where every step along the way as we're processing the data, we're adding value to it, and that value is something that we're giving back to our customers and frankly to our bottom line as we use that data in different ways to solve those challenges of our customers. And so that synergy between our industrial businesses in our financial services business was something I didn't expect to find as much of that has, I think, been very helpful for me in getting up to speed in this job.
One of the things that GE is legendary for, and you're a great example of this, is talent development. You've been a CIO, as I mentioned, in many parts of the organization, or at least an IT leader, and an incomplete list includes GE Power and Water, Power Generation Services, Aviation, among others. Every time that you became a CIO, CTO of one of these units, it was an internal promotion or an internal hire, as opposed to, you know, getting an external recruiting firm involved and seeking people from other parts of the organization. And I know that's something that the organization rightfully takes pride in building great talent, building succession plans, and so on. As someone who has benefited from this and who has continued to seek interesting opportunities from across this vast enterprise, can you talk a bit about the methods used and the care that is taken into ensuring that the leaders of tomorrow are groomed today?
Yeah. You know, Peter, I think one, so I'll talk about a couple of things. I think first off, you got to create a team environment that's around coaching. I'm a big believer in coaching. Leadership skills get built out of experiences, just like if you're coaching a sports team, they get built on the field. And so you want to put people in situations where they can work on building the skills that they need to be successful, but in a safe environment where you're there to kind of protect them and to make sure that you're giving them pointers on how they can do it better along the way. And if you're truly coaching, not doing for them and not telling them how to go do something, but you're coaching them to find their own way, I think that's just got to be at the beginning of the process, is just understand that you're a coach. I think the second part is you got to attract great people. And the market is as competitive as it's ever been. And so you got to make sure when you're attracting that you've got a purpose, that people understand why you're hiring them and that they're really coming in to work on something bigger than just be a cool technologist. And frankly, I think in GE, we've got a great purpose. You know, we're inventing the future of flight. We're powering parts of the world that have never been powered before. We're, you know, creating transportation routes around the world that never existed before. We're providing clean water. And so our purpose is pretty cool. And when you can connect what people are doing day to day to that purpose, you're able to attract them. So first off, it's about coaching and developing. Second off, it's about making sure there's a purpose. And then finally, it's around being a meritocracy. And that's kind of the hallmark of GE leadership, is that people who perform well succeed. People who do what they say they're going to do get promoted. And so I think making sure that you're creating a meritocracy that differentiates is also something that's very important when you're building a community of folks that you're going to count on to be the future leaders of the company. So that's the Jim Fowler opinion, at least.
We've mentioned a variety of technology trends, Internet of Things, analytics, more generally speaking. Are there other technology trends that particularly excite you, Jim, as you look in your own personal crystal ball a year or two or three out into the future, things that you're beginning to investigate to see whether or not those trends might hold water and warrant investigation and ultimately investment within GE Capital?
Yeah, so in GE Capital specifically, I would tell you, financial services crossover with the industrial internet and the Internet of Things is clearly at the forefront of our minds. I think financial services 5 years from now looks very different than it does today. And companies that can figure out and understand how to help their customers be more profitable, to optimize the assets that they're funding, whether it be inventory, whether it be a piece of equipment or a facility, are going to be the financial services of the future. I think the days of lending money for a specified interest rate and getting paid back, I think at a rate that is worthwhile, I think is going to be tough. I just think it's going to be more and more competitive when you look at crowd-based funding, when you look at all of the different places that people can turn for low-cost capital. I just don't think that's going to change in the short term. So I think you've got to differentiate yourself. And I think the Internet of Things and the industrial internet specifically is one area that from a financial services company that we have to really harness. I think that you're starting to see a new renaissance in industrial businesses. And so as a financial services guy, I'm really interested in that. I'm now interested in the fact that, you know, the distribution chain of a large manufacturer of products may look very different in a world where 3D printing really comes of age, and that how we think about funding inventory is going to look very different 10 years from now as that technology really takes off. And so we're really interested in watching that technology specifically and the role that financial services will play in helping that area grow. And then, you know, I would just, the last part for me that is just really interesting are this idea of marketplaces. And you're seeing brand new financial services marketplaces pop up all over the place. You know, I was just reading this week about a new one in real estate that's a pop-up industry and a new marketplace for real estate lending that's coming of age. And understanding how in a regulated world those marketplaces are going to play is something that we're very interested in. We're spending a lot of time there. You know, a lot of the differentiator that they are using is around their models. And we take a lot of pride in our models, too, from a financial services perspective. And so there's a lot of discussion around, are there new marketplaces that we're going to play in or that we want to develop based on our customer bases? And so those are the ones that I'm spending the most time thinking about from a technology perspective.
Well, Jim Fowler, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT, sharing your perspectives and some of your thoughts of the future of GE Capital and some of the trends that you're watching, as well as helping us understand some of the processes that you've used to make yourself the successful executive that you are. Thank you so much.
No, thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.